Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our roundtable panel for this Thursday morning, the last day of July, the 31st. The summer is racing by and we are at the end of July, so we head into August, and we thank you very much for being with us this morning. A quick programming note, we will be broadcasting live from Tanglewood tomorrow, our second annual Tanglewood pilgrimage, and we're looking very forward to that, so it should be an awful lot of fun. Yes?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, you can put that in front of your face,
absolutely,
and it actually
works
better.
I'm looking forward to it. It's just that I forgot.
Oh, you didn't?
Yeah. But
okay, for some reason your mic isn't on.
Oh, yeah?
Your mic is on, but he's not talking, is he?
Flapping lips. I don't know.
Okay. You can hear him, but the mic is on. Is that what I'm saying? Okay, so I'm going to do this.
Okay.
Hold on. So when I do this, just cough.
And turn your head.
And turn your head. Right. Turn your head. Now try that.
No grabbing, please.
All right. So that mic does not seem to be working.
Well,
so
that's why we have a crack engineering staff.
All right. You know what? Oh, hold on.
We'll be racing downstairs right now.
Yes.
Hello.
All right. So,
okay, you
know
I
what?
Can share a mic.
Why don't we take a break and just maybe try to get this situated?
But I'm sure one of our crack engineers will be running downstairs.
You guys
share.
Can share?
We're
okay.
Sharing.
All right. Well, we'll do that in a minute, and we'll take a pit stop in about 5 minutes, and then they can come in and figure that out. All right.
I'm sure they're running downstairs right now. We give them fire training.
The footsteps, yeah.
We give them fire pole training.
And when
come down on the fire pole.
And where's the fire pole?
The fire pole goes from one restroom to the other.
See, Pat's in there right now. All right, let's.
He looks concerned.
Pat, will you tell? Do you want us?
Pat is our chief engineer, so you'll all know.
All right, now try
Mr. Patrick Cooney.
Try one, this one.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, see that one doesn't.
8, 9, 10.
There you go.
Yes,
you had it there, Pat.
You had it there, Pat. Okay.
Yep, that's good.
Pat has red hair. That's what makes it work.
Okay, excellent. I think there is a little short in the switch or something like that.
Sure. That must have been it.
We'll go with that.
All right.
Oh, the crack engineering stuff.
Yeah.
Right. They came down the pole.
Right.
They did.
Our secret pole from the upstairs restroom to the downstairs restroom.
Yes, the crack engineering staff got off the pole.
Boys.
All
let's
right.
go.
Superman is flexing behind the glass.
Right. Do I have to give him a dollar?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, in his belt.
Well, there we go. So that's our start for this morning.
This is really radio verite.
It certainly is. Well, it's
and you know, it
how we
really
make the sausage.
Make
how we make
difference.
The sausage, yeah.
Yeah, right. You don't want to see it.
All right, so let's start off with the big story of today and an escalation. Well, first of all, let me introduce Alan Chartok. This is where I was starting. Alan Chartok.
Hello.
I guess where it was originally starting is we're broadcasting from Tanglewood tomorrow, so that's exciting. So you're off the hook tomorrow.
Well, I was going to be anyway because I'm in Rochester.
You're right. Okay.
Doing consulting.
Right. I'm in political consulting mode tomorrow.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Actually, tonight.
The executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal, Stu Shinsky, is with us.
Good morning.
Good morning, Stu, and Libby Post, political consultant extraordinaire, with us this morning, and we thank you very much for being here. In an escalation of the confrontation between the United States Attorney in Manhattan, Preet Bharara,
oh boy,
and Governor Andrew Cuomo, over the cancellation of his own anti-corruption commission, Mr. Bharara has threatened to investigate the Cuomo administration for possible obstruction of justice or witness tampering. Now, the question I have is, it seems like this was always a possibility. If I'm reading this article correctly, it seems as though he's not saying that he's definitely doing it yet, but he's certainly thinking about it.
Well, I think what he's saying is, don't fool with the evidence. So that if you get, Joe, somebody like, Mr. Fitzpatrick from Fighting DA, who was a co-chair and who was quoted widely as saying that Cuomo has to remember this is independent in big capital letters, independent commission, and now comes out and says, nobody ever did anything to us. Everything is pure. There is a sense on some people's parts that bones may have been crushed.
Yeah, this is no accident that this document, shall we say, was leaked through the Times. the Mr. Bararis clearly wants this message out there, wants it firm, wants it loud.
Mm-hmm. And almost every time, Joe, just one more thing, that any politician has gotten into trouble, it's not only the original act, but it's the cover-up that always gets them. That's what got Big Dick Nixon.
That's
right.
That's right. Absolutely. And it's also not. It's also actually,
Richard.
Well, let's go with Richard. I was going to say something else, but I won't. But
did I say something bad?
No, you're fine.
Yeah. Fine. It's also not a coincidence that. Oh, you guys! You know your boys and your toys. It's also not a coincidence that last night they started, this is the first time I've seen it, the back-to-back 60-second commercials, 30 seconds first of Christmas in July for Astorino, and it's a very cute, funny commercial about Christmas gifts for all of his political patronage folks, and then right after that, I'm sure it's in the same package, Cuomo's doing a great job. But not one word about cleaning up Albany. Jobs, economy, lower taxes.
Which, Libby, if I may interrupt, it was his whole thing in the beginning.
That's right. Not one word about cleaning up Albany. So I thought that was interesting. They've gone to the airwaves, and they're going to keep you know, pressing this. I said to Ray before, this is Moreland Gate, and he was like, oh, do we have to add a gate to everything? But the fact of the matter is that if there's a cover-up here, it's not going to be pretty.
So the warning.
Because Preet's not backing down.
So the warning is don't. Oh, I'm sorry, Joe.
So the warning in a sharply worded letter from Mr. Bharara's office came after several members of the panel issued public statements defending the governor's handling of the panel, known as the Moreland Commission. Mr. Bharara's office has been investigating the shutdown of the commission and pursuing its unfinished corruption cases since April. In the letter sent late Wednesday afternoon to a lawyer for the panel, prosecutors alluded to a number of statements made by its members on Monday, which generally defended Mr. Cuomo's handling of the commission. The statements were released on the same day Mr. Cuomo first publicly responded to a report in the New York Times that described how he and his aides had compromised the commission's work. At least some of those statements were prompted by calls from the governor or his emissaries, according to people with direct knowledge of the situation who are unwilling to be named for fear of reprisal. Would they be fearful?
By the way, on the media project this week, Stu was there and Rex. We did talk about how the number of unnamed sources in the New York Times has gone up exponentially because people just aren't going to risk, right. You know. So that's why you really have to have good rules in place, Stu, to make sure the editor knows who the source is so that, you know, otherwise people have been known to make this stuff up, but not on the New York Times, I may add.
So,
not that I know of.
So, Alan, give us of what we know and what we think we know when it comes to let's not call it a cover-up, but let's say the defense of
okay, so Andrew Cuomo's people get on the phone. Let's say Larry Schwartz, but we don't know that. But gets on the phone and starts to call the members of the commission because they're under fire because Cuomo's under fire.
And this would have just been since last Wednesday when the story was posted.
They get on the phone and they say, we need you to say that this never happened. Could you say, would you say, that kind of thing. Now, if... And I think that this is the question with Fitzpatrick. If they have given preliminary testimony, which is contraindicative to what they're now saying, that is where the danger flares go up.
So I'm curious if it seems, is it safe to say that Mr. Bharara's office is not out to get them, perhaps, but is strongly investigating this?
Yes. It is safe to say that.
All right. So is it also safe to say then by this warning that you are stopping perhaps the activity that would ultimately get you in trouble?
Okay. So we want every, let me give you an example. We want every email that was sent out of the commission. Okay. I mean, not some of the emails. We want every email. Richard Nixon, who we talked about before, had a missing 18
minutes
yeah. which Arlo Guthrie always claimed is the playing of Alice's Restaurant, which is exactly 18 minutes.
As it should
So that's right. There is this business of we're firing a shot over your bow mm-hmm. and saying you just better, because we're the federal government. We're going to be doing this investigation, and if it turns out that you have been obstructing justice here, that becomes the case.
And this is so ironic to a degree, if it's true, because one of the key yeah. things that Andrew Cuomo campaigned on was Albany needs to be cleaned up. And if you look over the landscape, well, the Moreland Commission, in theory, was going to do this. But even before the Moreland Commission, how many legislators, how many aides have been in not only hot water but boiling
and
water?
And by the way, Andrew himself, if I may call him
potentially.
That, he's the one who did the prosecutions in some of these cases.
Yeah, he was the right. Attorney General of yeah. New York before being governor.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, that the people who aren't saying anything, like David Soares, has declined to comment. I've seen that a couple of times. And I think that there'll be other people who will say, I'm not talking to you, I'm not talking to the press, not talking to anybody.
Whoa. Maybe. And maybe they're an unnamed source in the newspaper.
Well, yes. But what blows my mind, in a sense, is Mr. Fitzpatrick is a lawyer. He's a district attorney.
I was just going to ask this. Like, what are you thinking?
Right. Wouldn't he know not to contradict himself if he's already testified or if he's already been on record and now he's saying this and he knows the federal prosecutor is looking at everything with a fine-tooth comb? Wouldn't he just be quiet?
Or is he following orders?
Well,
whose
right,
orders?
Right.
No, see, what did Shakespeare say about this? Oh, what tangled lives?
Yeah.
You know,
what a tangled web we weave.
Yeah. Right.
We weave webs.
We don't know what the points of access from the Cuomo people to the Fitzpatrick people are. We don't know who knows what, when.
Right. It could be 6 points of separation, for all we know.
Now, I know we talked about this on Tuesday's program, but so the governor comes out on Monday in his first public statement.
In Buffalo.
Which seemed to me, and again, I know we talked about this, but it just, if that's your defense.
What, being in Buffalo or just?
Well, no, meaning, you know, what he said and very yeah. strong, it just seemed to be his tone more than what he was actually saying. And what he was actually saying, I don't know, didn't seem like a really good defense.
Well, no, the problem with the Cuomo defense is it keeps changing. You know, how do you say at one point and by the way,
well, he's basically saying I can do whatever I want to do, right?
Yeah. Liz, that's arrogance. Now, Liz Benjamin dropped a little dime here yesterday in which she had a source seeing Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney who is doing the prosecuting with the attorney general of the state of New York who has been under some criticism having lunch together in a very public place.
Yes, and not like a back room. Of a second floor of a restaurant.
No, this was a point being made that Eric Schneiderman, who
helped create the
commission. Well, the whole idea is in order to get the legislators to go along, the legislators were claiming the Moreland Act, is an executive function. They can't investigate the legislature. So Cuomo and Eric Schneiderman get together and they appoint every member of the commission as an assistant, just like Wyatt Earp, assistant U.S. Marshal in the old case, but in this case, assistant attorney general, and now they have the right to do it. Now, if Schneiderman helped set the commission up, did Schneiderman have anything to do with ending the Moreland Act thing? Shouldn't he have been consulted? I think this is a very interesting question.
Wouldn't you love to know what they were told, like the commission members were?
Told when? You mean?
Well, as far as they were told to in their public statements.
Well, they were told originally. They said the district attorneys from around the state who are part of the commission, Kathleen Rice from Nassau County, they said, we can't comment on this. And then a week later, they're putting out...
Right.
Gee.
That's a very interesting point, Stu.
Yeah. Yes. They backtracked. Did backtrack.
I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah. That's a very good point. Yeah. So that you can be sure. Now, you know, there are times, as Mrs. Wick told me in the eighth grade, Shawtalk keeps shut. There are times there are times that keep shut, you know, but I think that the governor's office may be trying a little too hard here. I mean, I think I don't want to offer anybody any advice, but I think there are times to keep shut. That's all. You know, just let it all flow.
I mean, the letter that Preet Bharara sent is, to the extent anyone attempts to influence or tamper with a witness's recollection of events relevant to our investigation, including the recollection of a commissioner or one of the commission's employees. We request that you advise our office immediately, as we must consider whether such actions constitute obstruction of justice or tampering with witnesses that violate federal law. So if you are one of those members, what do you do?
Well, yeah, speculation on my part, but I don't think he puts out that statement unless he's actually seen it.
Yeah. That was my
I think the Fitzpatrick case is the case because there apparently they had something from him in their initial investigation.
We have less than a minute, but Libby used the gate word. So are we talking at something of that level? Do you think this thing has legs? We talked about it a week ago.
I have no idea.
We have
idea.
Smoke. We will find out if we have fire.
I have no idea. I tell you, I said, and I meant it, that the only thing that could hurt Andrew Cuomo here is if Preet Bharara moves ahead with this investigation and maybe even indicts someone. I don't think he's going to indict the governor or anybody like that. But if that happens, that would be gate.
And again, in just our final minute here, but timing is everything, right? Mm-hmm. So for Preet Bharara, you're going to move quick if you're going to do this because you have an election coming.
Or not.
I think he'll get the case he wants and then determine the time frame.
Yeah.
Because if he's going to go forward with this, he's got to make it work.
Well, let's everybody remember, as I said before, that Nixon got elected even though everybody knew about Watergate.
Right.
Right.
So, and that's.
But you don't look at this and say, oh, we'll look at it after the election.
No, you just, as Stu says, you go ahead with your case. You just pursue.
We'll be back. We'll talk more about this. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org for your comments. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel. We were just having a dress rehearsal for the second half, and it was quite enlightening on all fronts. So I thank you very much. Libby Post
is
here.
My dress?
Yes.
They warn you not to call politicians.
That's
not
right.
Not to call what?
Politicians. You can't use.
It's
Richard. It's not Dick.
Oh, okay, fine.
There you go.
We're stepping on anything. Right.
Exactly. Thank you very much. Libby Post, political consultant, is here. Stu Shinsky, who is the, at least for the time being, until he gets back to his desk, and guilty by association.
I hope no one's listening at Poughkeepsie. Thank you.
The executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal. And Alan Chartok is here as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. So let us talk about what is going on with the Met Opera. With time running out before a lockout of its workers threatened for later this week, the Metropolitan Opera proposed on Wednesday that federal mediators be brought in at the 11th hour to facilitate negotiations with several of the company's unions. But it was unclear if the unions would agree to a mediator or if there was enough time left to forge a deal. The Met wants to cut the pay and benefits of its workers. Its general manager, Peter Gelb, has threatened to lock them out if no deals are reached before the contracts covering its employees in 15 unions expire Thursday night. Talks have been contentious and both sides say unproductive, leaving the Met on the brink of its worst crisis in decades.
This is awful. I mean, what are we going to do if we can't play the Met?
Well,
did I say something funny?
No. Well, yes. But
because there's some very devoted people, to the opera. And they've threatened things like impeachment if we ever take it off. Impeachment of me, that is. And other things. And, but of course, we do know that the unions are very powerful in New York. And, they make a lot of money both at Carnegie Hall and the Met and the rest of the stuff. So, Gelb may be trying to bring things down a little bit. I think I read, somebody could correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure you will, at WMC.org, at roundtable WMC.org, that the average salary of a stagehand at Carnegie Hall was something like $400,000.
Oh, come
at
on.
Carnegie Hall or at the Met?
No, at Carnegie.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just giving you an idea of, isn't that incredible?
I can't imagine that's
baseball player money.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the fact that there are so many unions there and that, you can't walk over here because this one has to raise the curtain and all that sort of stuff. But from my perspective, long term, what is this going to do for their development potential in terms of raising money from their donors?
Well, it depends who their donors are. Yeah, if it's the Koch brothers, let me tell you, they might be very...
Yeah, the Koch brothers bailed out Lincoln Center.
Right. There's more where that came from.
Yeah, but, you know, it's whether or not this is going to, from my perspective, for the little donors, for their ongoing fundraising, what kind of impact it's going to have if they're not, if they don't have the shows, if they aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. If they were serious, they'd bring in a binding arbitrator, not a mediator.
The I think somebody doesn't want a binding arbitrator.
No, because they really don't want to have a resolution. A mediator is not legal. I mean, it's legal, but it's not like you have
both sides have to agree.
You have to agree to what it, but the binding arbitration, you do.
Just quick clarification. Right, the stagehands at Carnegie Hall make $400,000 a year.
You see, you all thought I was making that up. And here's what. I wrote my column in the Berkshire Eagle last week because my wife, the lovely Roselle, claimed that I was wrong when I said there were 70 restaurants in Great Barrington. Turns out I was wrong, but she was. She thought there were 30. I thought there were 70. Turns out there are 63 restaurants in Little Great Barrington. Yeah. Now, these things come filtering into your mind, and you hope you're right when you say them.
Wow, $400,000. I got into the wrong business.
Well, depends. You don't, you know, you don't have a hernia.
No,
so,
I don't.
Those stagehands have hard work. Arlo Guthrie said it best when he said, "My father wrote The Union Maid. My father wrote, all these wonderful folk songs about unions, the Ladies Auxiliary. But how come it takes three guys to bring my guitar into Carnegie Hall?"
Yeah.
So what does the Met do?
Like anything else,
I silenced the crowd.
You know, it's gonna get settled. I can't say I'm the biggest opera fan in the world, but I'm curious about the demographics of the folks who visit the Met and their age and the graying aspect. And, you know, are younger folks getting into this type of music?
Well, I think
music?
They are, actually.
I hope they are.
It's very interesting. It's very interesting because I always thought what you think, that they're older and all the rest of it. But we hear, every time I talk about maybe it's time to not have the opera on WAMC, usually in order to motivate people who listen to every single Met thing and never give a dime, the WAMC to keep it up. I talk about how much it costs to go to the Met. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of dollars each seat. We're talking about for the seats, and then we're talking about bringing a car in, parking, hitting a pothole, having to do your axle all over again for thousands of dollars. It could cost you a lot of money. But it's a lot of money.
If he's trying to break the unions. Which is what it seems like he's trying to do.
Well, it
here.
Depends if the unions he's have gone. Not, the question is, have the unions gone too far?
Right. Well, I mean, if you're making $400,000 for being a stagehand, some people might think the unions have gone too far. But if he's trying to break the unions, he's doing it in the wrong place.
So according to the New York Times, in an article written on December 28th of last year, stagehands for the top four stagehands at the Met Opera were paid $500,000 a year. $500,000 a year. Mr. Gelb, who declined, this is in this December article, declined to discuss union work rules or pay in detail, did note that managing costs was essential, to Libby's point. Arts organizations are faced with financial challenges that don't seem to get smaller, they get larger, Mr. Gelb said, and what we're looking for is to find a sustainable business model that will enable us to secure our future, which also involves the welfare of the people who are members of the unions.
And how much does he make?
He makes a lot.
Right. We can look at the
1099. I can find that. I can find
GuideStar.
That out in 2 seconds. Well, yeah. I probably don't even have to do that.
Yeah. But how much does he make?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's costly to live in New York. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
You know. And,
yeah, but that's
and
choice.
If they have seniority and if they've been there for a long time and blah, blah, blah. But it's it might be dark in the Metropolitan Opera House.
Well,
for
that's
quite
what happens.
While.
You know, it's what happens. Yep. They want their pay. Right. And on the other hand, remember, this is a potential lockout, meaning he won't let them in.
Right. And what's interesting is you don't hear anything from the board. Of the Met, or the president of the
Well,
board
the
Met
president isn't doing this without the backing of the board.
You know, they need each other. They're going to settle this. There's too much money at stake. They're going to settle this. Right. They just need each other too much. They will find the compromise, and they're going to go on.
By midnight tonight?
Well, that's a good question, Libby.
Because that's when it's due. It's all due.
Well, they can always stop that clock.
But you're right, Stu. The fat lady will continue to sit.
Yes. For $250 a seat in the back of the auditorium.
Right, right.
Peter Gelb took a pay cut of 11%, 11% pay cut in 2009 to make a salary $1.3 million. In salary and benefits.
It's not as much as some other people at cultural institutions.
I guess.
And if your stage chance of getting $500,000, that's not a lot of money.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point.
But I'm sure not all the stage hands are making
No, the top four is what they mentioned.
And the other guys are probably making bupkis, so.
Yes. Okay, let's take a break. We'll move on and tackle other stories in the news. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from Jenkinstown Motors New Paltz, a repair shop for domestic and foreign autos and specializing in Japanese cars for over 30 years. JenkinstownMotors.com. Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance November 12th through the 14th at the Gideon Putnam Resort, Saratoga Springs, with registration now open. CurranCompliance.com. And Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we would love to hear from you. Are we good in the mail?
Well, we have one letter from somebody who wants to know. He's anonymous, of course, and says, will WAMC's roundtable panel ignore the Gaza massacre again today? You know, these are terrible things. We have spent a lot of time on this issue, and we will continue to spend a lot of time on the issue. But I don't like hearing from anonymous people. They know who I am, so I'd like to know, you know, who they are when, you know, when they call out.
I call it the cowardice of anonymity.
Yeah. Not good.
Not good. We welcome your letters as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Okay, so I'm paging through the American Journal of Psychiatry last night.
Having trouble sleeping?
There was a ball game on, Joel.
That's right.
I love that. I have no idea how you do all that you do. It's astounding.
Yeah, and I've been a subscriber to the American Journal of Psychiatry for at least 20 years. So in a study published online Wednesday, they said that a simple blood test could determine a person's risk of suicide and provide a future tool of prevention to stem suicide rates. Researchers say they have discovered a genetic indicator of a person's vulnerability to the effects of stress and anxiety, and therefore the risk of suicidal thoughts or attempts.
Nasty.
It's a dental office nearby.
Wow. Left molar, please. Yeah.
Stu, rinse.
Oh, is that Lawrence Olivier?
There is a drilling sound that we're hearing,
an electrician in the building doing something.
Yes. Well,
right
not
over,
in the studio.
Right over the studio.
I think we're all getting screwed. But
maybe this explains your microphone not working.
But I was just at the the dentist, and it had a familiar ring to it.
Yes, very much so.
I have to go.
And it suddenly stopped.
All right, so let me get back to the suicide story.
Yeah. The dentistry and suicide. Yeah,
The Johns Hopkins researchers looked at how a group of chemicals known as methyls affect the gene SKA2, which modifies how the brain reacts to stress hormones. If the gene's function is impaired by a chemical change, someone who is stressed won't be able to shut down the effect of the stress hormone, which would be like having a faulty brake pad in a car for the fear center of the brain, worsening the impact of even everyday stresses. This was a great Washington Post article because it actually described this in a way that I could understand it. Yeah,
no, this is really good. This is good stuff because we're going to find a gene for everything. You know that. Sooner or later, we will find a gene for everything. But it doesn't mean that if you have aggravated stress that you're going to jump off a building, right? It doesn't mean that. It just means you may be more likely to be unable to handle the stress. So I think we got a long way to go here.
Well, what this does do is open up the opportunity for pharmaceutical research to figure out to provide pharmaceuticals and drugs that will help people
to alter that gene.
And to help people deal with stress, because living in the life that we live in, this world, it's an incredibly stressful place. Even if you're even if you don't, you know, even if you're not here every day on the round table, it's still a stressful world to live in and a difficult world to live in. And and suicide should not be the answer, although there are plenty of people who do take their lives every year.
No, I was just going to say, yesterday I was interviewing a congressman who shall go nameless, good guy. And
we'll be on the congressional corner sooner or
right,
later.
One of these days.
Right.
You know, he said, "How are you, Alan?" I said, "Oh, it's a tough world." He said, "What do you mean by that?" I said, "Well, you know, Freud was right. Thanatos versus Eros, you know, we're all getting older. We're all approaching death." And he says, to me, "Glad I called."
So uplifting.
Wow.
Right.
I wonder if this is going to open up some civil liberties questions, where if someone is having a difficult time, if it's psychologically, and will a family member want to compel a test to see if there's a suicidal risk here, and how that will be treated at different types of cases. The medicine is fascinating. Yeah. The absolute ability to detect something so potentially important, but, you know, will it become a, well, you're going to have this test, and, well, I don't want this test, and how will this be treated and doled out in a fair
way? Well, we went through that with HIV, certainly. Yeah. You know, in other words, compulsory testing, that wasn't going to happen.
Except that HIV is a communicable disease. This is not communicable.
Well, the two things.
Well, by your parents.
Well, yes, but it's not. Oh, come on. There's a big difference. But
maybe you should do the parents, and then they won't.
Right. Yeah. But what this is, it brings up the whole notion of designer genes and gene therapy
clean genes.
And the gay gene and what that means and how parents might want to.
Yeah, it's a eugenics. We may have this whole business.
Yeah. So it is the science is great, and
80 to 90% accuracy, they believe.
Yeah, right. I mean, that would be great. I mean, I have a friend who worked in the suicide hotline and that organization in New Jersey for a long time, and it's hard to be on the other end of the phone when that person wants to kill themselves.
Sure.
Now, and to your point earlier about the pharmaceutical aspect of this, we may very well already have the answer to that, but
we don't know.
But the question always is, you know, when do we see these signs? Do we see them too late? And even if there is a predisposition.
Yeah, how do you apply treatment?
Right. Mm-hmm. How do you and further, with the mental health system that we have in this country, which I would argue is broken, then how do we fit this into the mold? And hopefully it's a step that could move us in the right direction, but it seems, as someone here said just a moment ago, we still have a long way to go.
Yeah. I mean, women who have the BRCA gene,
right,
you know, make the decision to have radical mastectomies so that they don't.
They do.
So Angelina Jolie is a.
But we haven't figured out
yet. Perfect example of that.
How to do genetic splicing without doing this mastectomy thing. Yeah,
right.
So that's where it's all going.
Right.
Why we're going to live to 200.
Sure. So that we don't have to deal with.
That's why you're going to live to 200.
I don't know.
My age. Okay. So we have a couple of letters. Did you want to hear them?
Yes.
Okay. From Pharma. from Julius, our friend Julius, about pharma. There's a pill for everything. Slippery slope, regards Julius. Okay, Ted said, stagehands making $500,000 and the response is, how much does the director make? Are we permitted to say that some union worker salaries are out of line? Most New York area teachers, doctors, police officers, and firemen, women, do not make that kind of money. And then, that's right, and then Tom wrote on union payroll, so don't you think the Met could find non-union stagehands who would be thrilled to work for $250,000 a year? The unions have absolutely gone too far. Greed has overtaken the initial idea of securing fair wages practices for the workers in an industry. Three guys to carry Arlo's guitar? Doesn't that clearly show how ridiculous unions have become? And then Tom sent a second letter. And I don't know why, but it's not necessary to do this, Tom, but thank you. I pledged online today, by the way.
We thank you for that.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah. Right. Not necessary when you submit
keep those
a comment.
But emails coming.
Yeah.
You nothing wrong to, with it. You don't have to buy anything to participate in the contest.
No.
No. So I think it's last thought on I'm watching the Astorino ad that that Libby was pointing to. I had not seen it yet.
It's
so
Christmas in July.
Well, actually, what you're watching is not an Astorino ad.
Astorino
about
ad.
Astorino.
Right. Yes.
And we know that Andy called up out of the $50 million we know he's going to have for this thing. We know he called up more ads.
This is the New York State Democratic Committee.
Astorino is not going to have the opportunity to define himself at all. He doesn't have the money, and Andy is going to be defining him for the electorate.
Well, maybe yes and maybe no. Let me give you the other side of that real quickly, and that is that we've had Zephyr Teachout on a couple of times. She was able to raise to get 45,000 signatures to run in a primary against Andrew. There are other ways of getting your message out. Mario used to say when he was running against a rich billionaire, every time you see one of his ads on the television, a light bulb should go off in your head saying they're trying to buy the election. And so, you know, there are other ways of getting it out.
Yes, I agree. However, you and I and Stu and Joe watch this stuff, are fascinated by this stuff, and pay attention.
Yeah.
The average Joe watches average TV, Joe. And that's how they get their information.
That's the perception.
Right, and it's all about perception, and the perception is reality here. So,
yeah, mudslinging works.
Yes, people say they hate it,
it works.
But it works.
We are.
And that's why I work for judgeship candidates, so I don't have to do that. That's exactly why.
We are going to end there. Thank you very much, everyone, for being a part of our discussion. Again, we'll be at Tanglewood tomorrow,
yes,
broadcasting from the press porch.
I'm glad you reminded
me. At Tanglewood. And I'll remind you.
Yeah, somebody would have told you.
Yeah. We'll
when you got here.
You got
right
here.
There's
no
morning.
One here.
No one. I turned on the radio.
Yeah. I should be there.
O-S.
Well, at least you're not far.
Oops.
That's good.
Right.
Thank you very much. The roundtable continues.